Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Dave Schombert, who's founder, president, and CIO of Metropolitan Capital Strategies. Welcome, Dave.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And Dave has got his BS in finance from George Mason University. He began his career in finance as a financial risk analyst, evaluating risk reward on major contracts for Fortune 500 companies. After spending 20 years in the private sector, Dave continued his career as a vice president of private client wealth management for Smith Barney. And during his tenure in the financial arena, he developed a tactical and quantitative investment philosophy that sets him and his firm apart from the standard investment approach. As I said, he's the founder, president, and CIO of MCS, and he uses this unique philosophy to manage the portfolios that he is managing for various clients. Now, tell us again the strategy and philosophy and approach of MCS.
Well, simply put, it's comprised of loss avoidance and also adding appreciation when the risk environment, as we perceive it, is very low.
Okay.
And now we avoid the large losses, and that way we can smooth the ride for the clients. And that's one of our primary concerns, because the psychology of clients is very important, as well as making money in the stock market. And MCS also does not sacrifice profits, meaning that we move into the lowest risk assets whenever it's necessary. Again, it's our opinion that we're going into an area where we should avoid.
Just avoid it. Avoid the stuff that is bad.
Yeah.
And what about benchmarks? I mean, a lot of companies use benchmarks to track and follow.
Unfortunately, benchmarks have losses during the year at certain points in time, and again, that's not our philosophy. So we avoid a benchmark per se. We have our own benchmark at a 15% annualized return over a 5-year period.
Wow. So 15% per year.
Annualized, that is correct.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean we're going to get 15% every year.
That's right.
That's correct. Some years we get 25 or 30.
And some years you get two or three.
Some years we don't get anything, two or three.
Okay. So what is it that you're following? Are you following market cycles? How are you doing this?
Well, what we're doing primarily is we have three areas that we look at. Primarily, it's the technical analysis, the fundamental analysis of the companies per se, and the economic factors.
Okay.
We've boiled it down to roughly 26 fundamental factors, 25 economic indicators, and about a half a dozen technical charts.
And over the years, how were you able to hone in on those 26 factors?
Well, we started obviously with hundreds of factors, and what we were looking for primarily was which indicators or factors give the most indicative aspect of whether or not it's pertinent to the environment that we're in. Mm-hmm. So we whittled it down, as I say, and as an example for fundamentals, earnings and revenue are the top two factors that we look at. Now, that makes a lot of sense to most people.
Yeah, that's what I look at too.
But unfortunately, it's the interpretation of that data which is crucial to the way that we analyze and perceive things in the marketplace.
So what differentiates the way in which you interpret the data, let's say earnings and revenues? And are you looking at individual companies? Are you looking at industries? Are you looking at trends? I mean, when you're looking at earnings and revenues, what is it that differentiates you from everybody else in the way they look at earnings and revenues?
Well, it's not so much differentiates us as it is the fact that our interpretation of that data is somewhat different, meaning that, for example, we start with the individual companies, and then we go to the industries, then we go to the sectors, and so on.
Okay.
So starting with the companies, we'll look at a company's earnings, and we insist that a company's earnings have at least a double-digit earnings growth for the last 1 to 5 years.
In order to invest in that company?
In order to even get on our list to begin with.
Okay.
It's not so much we're going to invest in that company. We do a lot of the exchange-traded funds, which are out there called ETFs.
Right.
And yet all of those ETFs are made up of companies. So we'll look at the top 5% of a company's ETFs, and we'll evaluate those. If they look very promising, then we'll go to the bottom 5% of that ETF, and we'll look at those earnings. If those earnings are still relatively strong to the top 5%, we will add that ETF to our watch list.
So it's basically looking at the bottom five, the top five in that particular exchange traded fund.
That is correct.
Why are market cycles and different types of cycles so important to your philosophy and your strategy?
Well, everything in life, as far as we're concerned, has a cycle. Okay. The market cycles, for example, last year when we had the implosion of roughly 20% during the August, September, October timeframe,
right.
That cycle was indicative of the fact that about every 2 years, you're going to have roughly a 20% nosedive in the stock market on average. Now, again, the word on average is what's crucial. For example, that doesn't mean every 2 years you're going to have it. You could have two in 1 year. You could
right.
have none for 5 years, as we experienced in 1995 to 2000. We had 0 20% downside.
Right.
The 10% downturn cycles, for example, occur on average about once a year, again being on average. In 2010, we had an 18% down cycle. We had not had a 20% plus down cycle since 2009. 2011 was ripe for a downturn. It became obvious to us in April of 2011 that there was going to be probably a 20% downturn because the S&P downgraded us on our credit rating to a negative outlook. And subsequent to that, usually within 90 days, the S&P will downgrade a country's credit rating, which it absolutely
did. Which it actually did. And, yeah. and nobody ever expected that to happen, did they?
Well, that's the first time in U.S. history it's ever happened. So
but
the answer
is yes. But you expected it to happen.
We expected it to happen based on historical data with respect to the way that the S&P rating agency had done it in the past with other countries.
So what are the main problems that we're facing as a country? What could derail this recent resurgence in the economy?
Well, primarily, our massive debt is number one on the list.
It really is a
list.
Huge issue.
It and it's becoming more and more of an issue every year. You can't run a $1 trillion plus deficit every year and not expect that debt to finally, eventually roar its ugly head. The other two areas that were could derail this in the short term is higher interest rates and the higher fuel prices.
Mm-hmm.
The combination of those two could definitely derail this economy.
So, I mean, why should we worry about the debt? We'll just keep borrowing. To pay off, you know, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, like the government's really good at doing. I'm saying that sarcastically.
I know you are. Well, unfortunately, most of us are fairly familiar with how debt works. It's not the debt per se. It's the interest that one pays on that debt. Right now, we're paying roughly $450 billion a year in interest payments on that debt.
Alone, just $450 billion.
$450 billion. The U.S. takes in $2.1 trillion in revenue a year, so one can do the math on that. It's 20%. If interest rates double, which we fully expect them to do in the next several years, to from 2% on the 10-year to 4%, you've automatically doubled that interest rate to almost $900 billion against a $2.1 trillion revenue stream. You've got a massive problem on your hands.
And coupled with all of the entitlement growth that is occurring with Medicare, Medicaid and Social Security, we've got to do something about this situation soon. But nobody has the courage to do it.
No one has the political will to do it. That's absolutely correct.
So where does that lead you to conclude on the election that's coming up? Are you encouraged about what's happening in terms of what the candidates are saying? This is not a political show.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know, but it really does relate to the economics that we're all facing ahead.
Well, the problem number one with elections, it's going to be determined, in our opinion, based on historical data over the last 100 years, what the economy is perceived to be doing in August, September, and October.
Okay.
So those 3 months leading up to the election will determine whether or not Obama's reelected or we get a new president from the other party.
Okay.
Now, with respect to the parties, the fiscal policy has been a disaster because of the deadlock between the two parties in Congress and,
right.
and the White House. So unless somehow the political will, if you will, where one party can dominate both Congress and the White House, you're going to have a deadlock every time on this fiscal policy. Nothing's going to be done.
I mean, I saw today in the Wall Street Journal that the Republicans have proposed a budget that further decreases taxes, but also slipped in some spending decreases as well. I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. I mean, we may have to increase taxes and decrease the debt to get everything under control, but that's not popular with anybody.
Not at all. Not at all. Now, our situation is such that, in our opinion, in order to stabilize the deficit and the budget, would be to eliminate federal tax entirely and just go to a national sales tax. And that way, if you have a 20% national sales tax right across the board, that automatically brings in about $3 trillion a year, which would balance the budget overnight.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. It's just, you know, the politics are not capable of producing that result. I don't think we'll ever see that happen. People have been clamoring for that in the economics world for decades. Mm-hmm. But in terms of tax policy, and I'm a tax lawyer, I don't expect that to happen, which I think would be great. I'll do something else, you know. What if there are additional downgrades in the European zone or in the U.S.? And is it possible that we may see that?
Oh, it's absolutely possible. And if that does occur, that's going to be a situation where contagia could take over, meaning that as Greece is contained, if you will, if Spain and Portugal and a few others, Italy, right now are on the verge, if they all of a sudden start to have the downgrades, the technical defaults, the situation increases with those countries, the U.S. eventually has to be affected. The U.S. accounts for 1/4 of the GDP of the world. Mm. The Eurozone also accounts for 1/4 of the GDP of the world.
That's half of the world's economic output is Europe and the United States.
Half of it right there.
So I guess we're all intertwined. I mean, how intertwined is the world economy?
Well, it's significantly intertwined. If you think about, as an example, just China alone. Now, China exports excessively, if you will, to the rest of the world. The Eurozone is going to affect China right now because the Eurozone's slowing down. It's in a mild to moderate recession. It could get more severe. The U.S. also imports from China. But just speaking of the Eurozone and China alone, China is slowing down significantly. If China slows down, they're going to have to either look internally to boost their consumer consumption rate in order to maintain their growth rate of about 7.5% is what they're predicting right mm-hmm. now. But as we see it, if Europe continues to be downgraded, if you will, or defaults, then that growth rate for China, in our opinion, based on our analysis, would indicate that China is probably going to be about a 4% growth rate going into 2013. That's going to have major ramifications worldwide.
Would you think then that equities are the place to put your money in light of the possibility that the Eurozone and the U.S. economy may further decline into recession?
Yes, and the reason I say that is every time there's a disaster somewhere, there's an opportunity that presents itself, and that's what one has to go after. You do a what-if scenario prior to the occurrences happening, and that way when they do occur, you're ready to get in there, get your money in a couple of months, and get out.
But isn't that market timing? I mean, isn't that what people call market timing?
Again, it's risk timing. What we're doing is we're timing the risk because the opportunities are only there for a limited amount of time, and you need to understand, don't get greedy, get in, get your money, and get out.
Okay. And you were mentioning, you know, how important consumers are to this whole puzzle. How important is the U.S. consumer to this whole puzzle?
A major component of the GDP, 70%, as a matter of fact, is consumer consumption. The thing that's hindering the GDP with the U.S. right now, one of the major hindrances, is the fact that most people are underemployed or some are even unemployed. You're talking about 26 million people underemployed or unemployed, with an additional 40 to 50 million people who are not actively working at all. Disabilities, retired, whatever. They're limited on their incomes, therefore they're limited on their consumption rate.
So it's incredibly important to make sure that the U.S. consumer is protected throughout this whole process.
Absolutely.
And so one of your strategies is to protect the principal of these consumers. So if people want to know more about your strategy, they should definitely visit your website at a minimum.
I would encourage them to.
With rising interest rates expected, this is the last question. Where do you, you know, how do you protect your portfolio if you're heavily in bonds, for example? What do you do?
Well, what you need to do is look at how exposed you are to the longer term, being 3 years or longer, duration bonds. If you're heavily exposed, for example, if you're 70-80% exposed to 3 years or longer, one needs to begin to take those off the table if possible, and or they need to hold them until maturity, assuming that you're going to get your money back at maturity. Those bonds will decrease in value, and if you need the principal, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
Dave Schombert, how do people get in touch with you at Metropolitan Capital Strategies?
They can phone us at 571-379-8586. or they can email us at info@mcsmgr.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Well, thank you, Wayne.
And thanks for listening, and have a great week. We'll talk to you next week with another special topic and special guest.